approach with this program is to work as cooperatively with the fishermen as possible.
Observing the gillnet fishery in Southeast. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, asking Alaskans to critique state judges.
The council will be deciding on its recommendations to voters about whether judges should be retained in office for another term.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
A new agreement signed today between 14 Alaska Native tribal health programs and the Department of Veterans Affairs will allow both Alaska Native and non-Native vets to receive health care services in tribal clinics in various parts of Alaska, so they won't have to travel to Anchorage or Seattle to receive service. Under the agreement, the VA will reimburse participating health care entities for the service. Additionally, the Alaska VA is coordinating training sessions for Alaska Tribal Health Program staff on VA benefits and eligibility, and enrollment processes to help eligible veterans get into the VA system. Democratic Senator Mark Begich, a member of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, has been working on the agreement for 3 years. A list of the participating health organizations is at our website, alaskapublic.org. The public will get a special opportunity to talk about judges next week as the Alaska Judicial Council will hold a statewide hearing to get opinions on the 26 judges up for retention votes this fall. Under the Constitution, judges must at times stand for a vote to let the public decide if they should be kept on the job. The term varies by court level, and except for appellate benches, the elections come from the judicial district in which the judge works. Larry Cohn, the council's executive director, says the hearing is in preparation for the council to focus attention on judges who must undergo scrutiny this year.
The Judicial Council will be meeting in June, and at that point, the council will be deciding on its recommendations to voters about whether judges should be retained in office for another term. We will publicize those recommendations most likely in July. And, of course, they're included in the statewide election pamphlet that's sent to every household in the state.
Cohn says public comments about specific judges are accepted at any time, but the current hearing will be a reminder for this election cycle. He says it is uncommon for the council to recommend against retention. However, there has been one judge in each of the last 3 election years, and 2 of them were turned down by voters. The hearing will take place at legislative information offices around the state on Wednesday at noon. A list of judges and the addresses of legislative offices can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. Federal observers are preparing to work the gillnet grounds around Petersburg and Wrangell this summer. Starting in June, National Marine Fisheries Service contractors in small boats will shadow individual gillnetters and monitor any interactions between marine mammals or birds and the vessels. They'll also be interviewing fishermen about their gear and fishing practices. Federal officials say the information will be kept confidential and contractors will be as unobtrusive as possible. But fishermen still have concerns as the season approaches. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Federal law requires the government to monitor for marine mammal interactions and injuries in many commercial fisheries throughout the country. For the next 2 summers, the National Marine Fisheries Service will be observing the Southeast Alaska salmon gillnet fishery in districts 6 and 8, which is near Petersburg and Wrangell. They plan to look at other parts of the region in subsequent years. Bridget Mansfield is with National Marine Fisheries Service Alaska Marine Mammal Observer Program.
We rotate through various state fisheries, and we've looked at probably 7 or 8 fisheries over the last 10 or 15 years. So at this point, we are looking at the Southeast Alaska drift gillnet fishery for the same purpose. We're just collecting information on any of the interactions that may occur between the commercial fishing gear and marine mammals.
Southeast salmon gillnetting is classified as a Category 2 fishery, which, according to NIMFS, means it has had occasional interactions with marine mammals that have led to death or serious injury. That classification could change depending on the results from the Observer program. NIMFS has contracted with Anchorage-based Saltwater Inc. to do the on-the-grounds work. Saltwater Program Manager Stacy Buckaloo says the observers will be on the fishing grounds for the duration of the regular gillnet season, which typically runs from mid-June to the end of September.
The approach with this program is to work as cooperatively with the fishermen as possible. Understandably, the gillnet fishery does not have a routine observer program, as do other commercial fisheries within the state. Therefore, the approach with this program is to be as adaptive as possible so we can be successful in collecting high-quality data that's useful for management purposes, but at the same time not disrupt the fishing activity of the people that are being observed.
Rather than working aboard the gillnetters, the observers will be on their own boats. They are using 23-foot aluminum vessels with aft cabins, which are made by Stabycraft. The observers will collect a variety of information about each vessel's fishing practices and gear, and, of course, any marine mammal or seabird interactions with the gear. When Saltwater and NIMFS met with the public about the program last fall in Petersburg, confidentiality was one of the big concerns for fishermen. They feared that some of the observers, once back in town for the night, might share information about a vessel's catches with friends or family, some of whom might also be gillnetters. According to Buckaloo, the observers and boat operators are made aware that they are not allowed to do that.
All staff hired are legally obligated to uphold the program's integrity, confidentiality, and conflict of interest requirements.
According to United Southeast Alaska Gillnetters Association President Bill Auger, fishermen are also concerned about how long it will take for NIMFS to observe the entire region.
I mean, one of our biggest concerns that we've had all along is that, you know, this is all part of the big program to get us changed the category that we're in. And if it's going to take them 2 years to do District 6 and District 8, how many years is it going to take them to do our whole fishery? And, you know, are they even going to have the money going forward to look at any of the other districts that we fish in? So what are they going to do with the information they get now if it's going to be 10, 15 years before they get us completely looked at?
NIMFS and Saltwater Inc. plan to hold a couple of public meetings in Petersburg and Wrangell later this month to present information on the program before it gets underway. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, tempers flare at the Anchorage Assembly over municipal election problems.
We did not throw that away, but that is hearsay. That was hearsay. It was not a personal chairperson.
I was there. I saw it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Exactly 1 month after the chaos of election night, the Anchorage Assembly voted to certify the municipal election last night. But the certification will be subject to the results of a hand recount of ballots. KSKA's Daisha Eaton was there and has the story.
At the start of the special meeting, Assemblymember Harriet Drummond moved to allow audience participation, but Assembly Chair Ernie Hall denied it, and that set off a member of the audience.
How can you sit there and say that you're not going to allow us to testify and give our opinions about how this election is going to be run?
We're going to have order.
How dare you?
We're going to have order in this meeting.
Citizens of your city that you've been elected to represent, and you're going to shut us out?
Security.
Security escorted the man, Robert Cortez, out of the Lusac Library Assembly Chambers. Assembly Chair Ernie Hall said that the election had shaken the community to its core, but that the Assembly had to follow the law.
In our eagerness to make amends, to immediately fix the problems, to respond to public outrage, disappointment, and concern, to advance solutions, in our eagerness to do all of these things, we cannot abandon our process. We must not lose sight of our duty to follow the law.
Then the Assembly heard from Election Commission Chair Gwen Matthew, and Assemblymember Debbie Osiander questioned her on concerns about broken security seals on memory cards for the Diebold voting machines. Matthew said the commission heard no reports of any security seals being broken, and that spurred more protest from an audience member who said she had reported a broken seal.
I was under the impression that one seal was broken. You found no seals broken?
In our interviews, in the emails that came in, in our all of that, we did not have any report of that. I'm not saying it didn't happen.
That's a lie.
I'm not.
I reported it. I reported it to her.
Order.
Check library. I reported broken seals.
Security.
Obviously, you threw that away.
No. We did not throw that away, but that is hearsay. That was hearsay. It was not a personal chairperson.
I was there. I saw it.
Security also escorted the woman, Wendy Isbell, out of assembly chambers. Before they made their decision, the body heard a report from an outside attorney, Timothy Petuminos. He said the assembly had a legal duty to certify the election.
If the citizens that made up the commission did something terribly egregious or something terribly corrupt and it came to your attention, you'd be duty-bound to say it. But absent extraordinary circumstances, this body would be vulnerable to legal attack by those candidates who properly won the election and those propositions and bonds and construction projects that properly passed, because there is a duty to certify, just as there is a duty to order a new election when the time comes.
After a lively discussion, the Assembly certified the election 8-3, with Harriet Drummond, Elvie Gray Jackson, and Patrick Flynn dissenting. Assembly Chair Hall says he's in final negotiations with a retired judge who will investigate the election as soon as possible. Clerk Barbara Grunstein will manage the ballot recount, which will involve 15 precincts, additional workers, and must start within 7 days. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
In a special meeting Tuesday evening, Wrangell's Borough Assembly voted to approve a resolution for a special election to be held in June on the question of whether to recall 8 of 9 members who comprise the city-owned hospital's board of directors. From Wrangell, KSTK's Charlotte Duran has the story.
This week's special meeting comes after the Borough Assembly's 3-2 vote approving the resolution for a special election was retracted last week due to a lack of votes. According to municipal code, an affirmative vote of 4 members of the Assembly is required for adoption of a resolution. Regrouping this week, all Assembly members were present for the special meeting. City Attorney Bob Blasco reaffirmed the purpose of the Assembly's vote, saying it's not a vote on whether the resolution for a special election for recall is right or wrong, but rather allowing the borough clerk to go forward with the scheduling of the election. On April 9th, Borough Clerk Christy Jameson certified that the petitions for the recall of 8 hospital board members were sufficient to go forward to the Assembly in the form of a resolution for a special election. Blasco says in the scenario that the Assembly voted to not approve the resolution and did not allow scheduling for a special election, any interested citizen could institute legal action for their right to vote. However, Assemblyman Don McConaughey voted against the resolution, stating that he believes a special election for a recall could mean a loss of funding for the new hospital project.
I sincerely hope that I am wrong, but I honestly feel that we will lose the funding for the new hospital. Funding entities talk to each other and are acutely aware of the conditions that exist within the towns they are considering for funding. Common sense tells me that $30 million, if I had $30 million, would I give it to somebody who is fighting or somebody who is cooperating?
Also voting against the resolution was Assemblymember Pam McCloskey and Wilma Stokes. Assemblyman Bill Privett voted in favor of the resolution. He says the petitioners of the recall have followed the rules of Wrangell's Municipal Code and says it's not up to the Assembly to decide whether the public can or cannot vote.
These citizens, right or wrong or indifferent, have chosen to do what they have done. And this is the recourse that is set up in our Municipal Code and ordinances for them to follow. And they have done that. And Quite frankly, I personally see that we have no choice but to allow that process to go through, period.
The Borough Assembly voted 4-3 approving a special election to be held June 19th. The election will be on whether to recall 8 hospital board members who sit on Wrangell Medical Center's board of directors. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Charlotte Duran.
Under the terms of the nearly $25 million loan agreement, the USDA requires stable management at the hospital. State Director of USDA Rural Development Jim Nordland says a recall of the hospital's board is a concern. He says if that happens, USDA will be looking at changing their loan from a revenue bond to that of a general obligation bond. This would require a vote of the public on whether they would be willing to take on the debt of the hospital if the loan was not paid off from hospital revenue. In early June, USDA will be reviewing their loan agreement. Nordland says they will wait until after the recall election to decide on terms of the new agreement. Juneau and Southeast region fared well by the 27th Alaska State Legislature. Before the regular session ended, lawmakers appropriated $2.9 billion for construction and maintenance projects statewide and $450 million in general obligation bonds to be approved by voters next November. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander takes a look at those destined for the capital city.
Juneau's portion of the new public works budget is more than $100 million.
And that's an amazing feat for our delegation.
Juneau Senator Dennis Egan and Representatives Kathy Munoz and Beth Kurtula call themselves a good team for the capital city. Part of Juneau's largesse is $49 million for the so-called SLAM project, the new state library, archives, and museum building. Total cost is estimated at more than $126 million, and it's unclear exactly what work will be done with the current funds. But the project has long been a capital city priority, and legislators say it's a relief to see the money roll in. Munoz is disappointed the legislature did not increase the base student allocation for school districts, but she's enthusiastic about the state's new scholarship fund. Last year, lawmakers set up the program endowment. This year, they added structure.
It's a $400 million fund with a 7% payout. Two-thirds will go for merit-based scholarship, and one-third will be for needs-based merit scholarship. And those are direct grants that will be available for qualifying students for the entire time that they're pursuing their degree or their certificate at an Alaskan post-secondary school.
As a member of the Senate Bipartisan Working Group, Egan is pleased with progress made on the most controversial legislation, including oil taxes and his bill to reinstate a defined benefit retirement program for public employees. The legislation would give employees an option of a 401k-style defined contribution or the guaranteed pension. Juneau legislators have introduced the bill every session since 2007, This year, it made it through the Senate.
It was too late in the session to make it through the House, but that's the most progress that's been made on anything like that in years. So I felt very happy about that, and we'll attack it next year again.
Juneau legislators say oil taxes will be back again next year, and they don't like the finger-pointing that took place at the end of the session. But they're looking beyond that to those projects that are sure to heat up the Juneau economy. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. And by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Jennifer Canfield. This week on AK, hibernation. Many mammals across Alaska are waking up from their long winter's nap, but exactly how they get in and out of hibernation is still a mystery. A scientist at the University of Alaska Fairbanks thinks unlocking the secrets of hibernation could benefit human health in the future. Kelsey Gabrowski has the story.
When an animal enters hibernation, its heart rate drops dramatically. Blood flow slows to a crawl. Its body temperature plummets to 37 degrees Fahrenheit. If a human were going through the same transition, it would require a trip to the emergency room. UAF researcher Kelly Drew tries to find what helps animals survive the hibernation season.
It was initially thought that animals, when they were in hibernation, since they have such low heart rates and such low blood flow, that it was similar to what a human would suffer during a cardiac arrest or a stroke.
But somehow animals make the transition easily. The sleepy state they enter during hibernation is called torpor. And figuring out how animals tolerate entering and exiting torpor could influence heart attack treatments in humans. Drew studies hibernation's implications for therapeutic hypothermia, a way of treating people right after they experience cardiac arrest. The treatment helps reduce inflammation and slow cell death in the brain.
Because right now, therapeutic hypothermia is achieved by packing people on ice, and it's very difficult to control and regulate, and people tend to fight cooling by shivering.
That jolt might be reduced if scientists could figure out how to get humans into a torpor-like state, because the body is already cooling down during torpor. Drew is studying Arctic ground squirrels in a basement lab at UAF. She asks if I want to see the squirrels, then introduces me to Jeanette Moore.
I'm a research technician, and my primary job is to help students.
Moore leads me away from Drew's office, down a series of hallways and heavy doors.
Anyway, I'm going to open the door, and they're probably going to start barking at us, but these are all males.
So what do they mean, the calls?
Well, that real strong bark is, I think, an alarm. Then everyone can hear that one from a long ways away. No, that one's just plain angry. Squirrels in general are not very friendly things.
We leave the room. And I wait outside a freezer while Moore gets a hibernating ground squirrel. She returns with a squirrel nestled in her two gloved hands.
It even looks frozen almost in a way. But if I hold it for a second, you'll see it move very gradually. And sometimes they'll make a little sound like a squeaky toy.
Now, this small ground squirrel looks peaceful, almost like a stuffed animal, compared to the agitated males in the other room. It barely responds to Moore's poking and prodding, deep in torpor. Drew wants to figure out exactly how the ground squirrels are getting into their torpor state. She wonders whether a substance called adenosine is at work. Adenosine makes animals feel tired and lowers body temperature.
Cats that sleep a lot in their cat naps, they were first shown that adenosine would accumulate in the brain if they were deprived of their naps, and then when they're allowed to sleep, the adenosine goes down. Adenosine will make you sleepy. Caffeine wakes you up because it blocks those adenosine receptors.
So that's really interesting. Caffeine doesn't necessarily bind to receptors that make you feel more awake. It just blocks the ones that make you feel sleepy.
Exactly.
So adenosine's in both people and ground squirrels year-round. In the summer, it makes us sleepy. But in the winter, it could trigger hibernation. Drew injected adenosine into her squirrels in the summer, and then again in the winter, to see if there was a difference in how they responded.
So when you put the drug into the brain, you see an effect almost immediately?
Drew found that adenosine lowered body temperature rapidly in the summer. But ground squirrels shook the effects off quickly. In the winter, the effects stuck. So Drew thinks that when ground squirrels get ready for winter, either the amount of adenosine in their bodies changes, or the adenosine receptors in their brains become more sensitive.
But for people, I think most of us can relate to the notion that in winter we tend to want to sleep more.
Drew's already taking what she knows about hibernating squirrels and trying to figure out how that can help human patients. But she thinks making that leap is still a ways away. For AK, I'm Kelsey Gabrowski.
For 300 Villages this week, we're heading to the village of St. Paul. The community is located on a small island in the Bering Sea, where there are many more fur seals than people.
I am Aquilina Lestenkoff. I am a lifelong Pribilovian. I'm Unangah. I have lived on St. Paul Island for most of my life. We're quite modern in that we have pretty good internet service. Our children all walk around with cell phones now and they text each other even if they're sitting right next to one another. We have a really awesome lava tube that runs up in the center of the island. And many people that come here like to hike inland and go inside the lava tube and check that out. We have a massive spring cleanup. The whole community comes together, and I think we are very pleased when we have visitors that come and say, this is a pretty clean place. And people take pride in that. So a lot of our efforts right now is to gear up for that May spring cleanup. A lot of our groceries are flown in. Some of the things that we have, we hope in our future and want to work towards are things like a greenhouse, for example. One of the things that I think we're very, very pleased to have is Friday night community dances. As long as I can remember, people have always come together and played rock and roll music. And it still exists to this day. So we have two bands in town, and you have everyone from the age of 1 and 2 to the age of 80 plus that will come to these community dances. The other thing that probably people would be surprised to discover is that we don't have any dogs on the island, and we haven't had dogs. They were quote-unquote outlawed as part of a protective measure for the northern fur seals. So they haven't been allowed here for probably 100 years plus now. I look out across the ocean and I just cannot imagine never seeing it on a day-to-day basis. I love the scent of the sea. I like the feeling of the wind. I love the fog.
Aqualina Lestenkoff lives on St. Paul Island. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Kelsey Gabrowski, Stephanie Joyce, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week when we sample the sweet taste of summer at a lemonade stand in Rainbow. I'm Jennifer Canfield.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Charlotte Duran in Wrangell, and Rosemary Alexander in Juneau. Jennifer Canfield was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.